Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reiki Radio. I am your host, Yolanda. And today we're going to have an incredible conversation about women in Reiki. So there is this book that was written by Zilke Kleiman and Amanda Jane called Women in Reiki. And I had the pleasure of interviewing both of them during the Reiki Raise Global Healing Summit, I believe 2 years ago. But today I had the opportunity to sit down and have a discussion with Amanda Jane. And we do talk about women in Reiki, some history there. Many of us who have taken Reiki classes have heard about Mrs. Takata and how she was a big part of why Reiki became so accessible to us here in the West. But there are some other women throughout the history of Reiki that are very important to the story and important to how Reiki survived even. And we'll talk about all of that. But we also get to learn about Amanda Jane's personal experience with Reiki, how she got on this path. She is a teacher of Jikiden Reiki, and she teaches classes in Cornwall and Kent in the United Kingdom. She also sometimes teaches internationally. So if you want to learn more about Amanda Jane and her work, be sure to visit her website, learnjikidenreiki.com. You can also learn more about this incredible book, Women in Reiki, by visiting womeninreiki.com. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, of course, and I will see you beauties on the other side. Okay, everyone. I'm really excited about today's conversation. We have a very special guest named Amanda Jane, who is the co-author of Women in Reiki. I do want to tell you first, truly, thank you so much for making the time to come and have this conversation with me today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, well, just for people, if you don't know, I had the pleasure of meeting you and Zilke, I believe it was 2 to 3 years ago through the Reiki Raise Global Healing Summit. And that was the first time I read the book, Women in Reiki, and my mind was blown. It was absolutely incredible. So I want to ask you some about that, of course, once we get into the conversation. But first, I just want to know more about you and your path. I'm always so curious about what drew people into Reiki, and you have an interesting story. So could you share a little bit about, take us back, what was going on in your life and how Reiki came into your awareness? Yeah.
Sure. So in the 90s, I worked in mental health here, actually in Cornwall, where I am now. And it didn't take me very long to decide that wasn't what I wanted to do. But I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, and so I went off traveling, and I heard about Reiki. I'd heard something about it. Somebody was talking about it, and it just really caught me. And so off I went around the world, like traveling, on one of the backpacker kind of route things.
Yeah.
And everywhere I went, I just looked for a Reiki teacher. And I met lots of people. Some of them were wonderful people. Some of them were on the more weird side of people. And this beautiful array of people, but I definitely didn't meet anyone that I wanted to learn with. And I actually decided in the end that I was just not gonna worry about it. I would forget it, And then, funnily enough, I was on the way back from South Africa, I think it was. No, I was on the way back from Bolivia to the UK. And in the airport, I met this girl who just came up to me in the airport, and she said to me, "Do you do Reiki?" And I said, "No." And she just said, she went, "Oh, you should." And then she just disappeared off. And I was like, "Oh, okay." And it was really interesting because I just kind of decided to forget all of that, really,
Right.
But then, you know, I came back to the UK. Various things happened. We won't go into in much depth, but I just kind of forgot about it again, honestly. And then I came to Japan to teach English. And it was only when I'd been in Japan for, I think it was about almost a year I'd been in Japan, and I suddenly remembered that Reiki came from Japan. And I was like, oh my God, I could have a look here, you know? And so that's what I did. I looked around and I found this little ad in a newspaper, English speaking newspaper. And I answered that and met the guy and kind of started to learn. But it wasn't for me. It just wasn't, you know, it's so important to get a match, isn't it? I
Right.
think we talked about this before. It's so important to get a match with your teacher and to feel that this is the right person for you to learn from.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not a criticism of different teachers, you know, and we shouldn't take it as such as teachers, you know.
Right.
There's just a something that is right for different people, and it's, you know, different for everybody. So this guy was not right for me at all. And so I stopped learning halfway through, actually, with him. But I talked to my colleagues about it in Japan, and I don't know. I think most people, some people are aware now that in Japan, you know, Reiki was a very scary word for
Right.
people.
Well, actually, a lot of people don't know that. So, could you explain a little bit about the translation and verse, ghost and yes.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean, basically, you know, there are kanji characters like our words that they can kind of change in meaning over time, you know. And although the word reiki can and originally, you know, was meaning, you know, this miraculous, mysterious energy or soul energy or this kind of thing, in actual fact, over time, the way it's read today when people look at it is ghost energy. So
Yes.
the rei can also be read as ghost. So when you talk to Japanese people about Reiki, they're like, what? And it terrified my friend who I was working with that I said that I was doing this Reiki thing. And she was so worried that I was joining a cult and that, you know, that was the end of me. She was really worried. And in fact, I told one of my Japanese students as well that I was going to do this Reiki thing, and he never came back to class ever again. He was terrified. But what was good about that was it really made me realize, you know, just how scary that can be and how misunderstood it can be in Japan, or it certainly was back then in the early 2000s.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if there's more understanding around that now, just because Reiki, you hear about it more. But it's really interesting it being that's where it originated, and still in modern translation that wouldn't have been known. Like, no, this doesn't mean. But can you imagine, really, if that's what it was called, ghost energy? You'd be like, what?
Right. If that's what
What?
it's called in English, we'd all be like,
Yeah. Well,
no way.
I have to ask you this, Amanda, because I think it's very interesting that you did start out in mental health, and then you have this like incredible, it sounds like soul seeking kind of journey, and Reiki pops up on the scene. But what was that desire even back then to get into mental health? I mean, were you always wanting to support people in some way? Was there something about us just as humans that you were curious about? Like, what brought you into that?
That's a really good question. I think there's several things that pop up when you say that. I know that I was always interested in what made people, you know, even young, what made people do things. Why did they say it like that? Why did they
Right.
do that kind of questioning I used to have. I also, I mean, I had different things go on when I was young. I had night terrors for such a long, long time. With such extreme fear, you know, I really can remember, like, it's seared into me that
Yeah.
lot of fear. And of course, my poor parents at that time, what they were telling parents to do was to leave the children, right?
Right.
Leave them. So I just screamed every night for years. I would scream and scream and scream and work myself up till I was sick and stuff, you know. My poor parents just, you know, they didn't know what to do and did what the experts told them to do. And of course, it just made it worse. So I think there was, you know, that, of course, stuff like that would make you more interested in helping others, I think. And then I had other trauma. I'm not going to go into it now. Like, I had other stuff happen, as many people do. And it just really, there were like key moments in my life that made me begin to look inwards more, you know, from a younger age, and just a much more kind of searching of what's the point, you know, which it came from a more depressive view to start with of what's the point, but then gradually over my time. Traveling actually, I would say, was one of the first things that helped me. That started to move into a journey of rather than what's the point, but what are we doing? Like, how amazing in this wonderful place? What does it mean? You know, and so it kind of morphed, I think, over my time traveling, and then from then in Japan, etc.
Well, that makes me curious too, because, a lot of people I know who are therapists or psychologists have friends that work in that realm. And I've met many people over the years who that is their desire. Like one part is curiosity, but one part just genuinely wanting to support people for whatever reason. And then coming to a space of wondering, is there something else that is needed to support us in our overall wellness, right? And then there's this deeper dive of curiosity of really our functionality and what does even wellness mean and how what's happening within us in deeper levels. So before Reiki came into your life, were you already curious about that? Or did your introduction to Reiki give you any kind of different curiosity about us and our function?
Yeah, I mean, I was already curious. I was already on a path because I'd been traveling before I went to Japan, and my dad died at a young age. It's actually almost my age now, so I realize how young it was now. But back then, you know, I thought he was a bit old. You know, it's your parent, right? They seem old. So after he died in 1999, that put me on as well. That was the catalyst for looking more deeply, I think, at things, and was there more afterwards? You know, those kind of questions that you tend to go into in that. And I actually got really sick after he died. I'd helped look after him, and then after he died, I don't know what it was like, but I really just was. It was one of those viruses or long-term viruses where I just was exhausted all the time. I couldn't get up, couldn't get out. And interestingly enough, we had a really cool doctor here, and he came to me one day and I said to him, I want to go traveling, but I can't because of this. And he shut the door actually. So it was just me and him. And he was like, go, just go. It's the best thing you can do is just go somewhere else. Like, just find your way through this to you, kind of thing. And so I think it was quite insightful because that was what I needed. And I'm not saying it's always what you need in that situation, but for me, he could tell that was what I needed. And so I went, and when I went, I didn't, like, you know, I could hardly do anything, but I just got on the plane to New Zealand and just trusted that, you know, it was going to be okay. And it took time, but. So to come back to your question, you know, I was already searching, already searching. I did a year of kind of a lot going on during my travels that really started to deepen me and give me more of an insight, I think, into myself and more trust in life. And then when I went to Japan and did Reiki, I would say it just brought me to another level. And opened up wide understanding, you know, it's the next step on my journey.
And before we even get into that, I mean, already your life experience is so interesting. But one of the things that echoes with what you're saying, I love, is that trust in life. And it's a lot of times those things that weren't necessarily part of our plan, or sometimes having that blind yes, and it opens up to the most incredible experiences. So it's like it's really interesting to even think you started out in mental health, life happens, you end up traveling, okay, and now you land in Japan and you're going to teach English in Japan.
Yeah.
So this is actually, when we get into the Reiki part, I'm curious, just as like a little side note, that must have been great for your understanding of, like, I guess the more subtle textures of Reiki that a lot of us don't learn about in the West through taking classes here, just being immersed in the culture. Like, I imagine there is a lot more of the subtlety, the understanding of what it's about or what it's pointing to, that may have been you got to experience in some way. So I do want to ask you about how you got to the teacher that you could sense was for you, because I agree that that's such an important thing. I've had like 5,000 teachers, but how did you get to the teacher that really resonated with you, and what was it about her that really spoke to you?
So, it's so interesting, isn't it? How, it's just yet another thing that was illustrated to me. Another fact, I think, about life that was illustrated to me through Reiki was, when you're chasing something, you end up kind of chasing it away, just like when you're fighting something, it goes further away. So, I mean, it gets closer. So basically, because I think I gave up looking for Reiki and the perfect teacher appeared without any effort in the end. And the way it happened was, I was talking to my friend. I was telling you, I spoke to my friend about doing Reiki. She worked with me, my Japanese friend, Ikuko. And she was terrified, right? So terrified when I said ghost energy to her. That she looked it up. She was like, oh my God, what's she getting into, and she started to look it up on the internet, and she found an old woman and her son who were living really close by to where we were teaching in Kyoto in Japan. And she said, I'm gonna find out what this is, right? So they had a little kind of they had a little kind of open meeting. It is where anybody can come to the house, receive some Reiki and talk about it and learn a little bit, not learn how to do Reiki, but just learn about it. And so she said, I'm going to go to this and find out what it is, right? And interestingly enough, I won't go into her story. That's in the book, actually, in the Women in Reiki bit. I'm pointing behind because it's there. That's in the Women in Reiki book, that her story, yeah, which is fascinating about how she nearly didn't go in, but then she did. Anyway, she wouldn't let me go with her because she was so kind of like, oh, I think it's weird. I'm Jan, I think it's weird. So off she went. And anyway, she came back and said, they're great. It's all good, right? So she took me another time. And for me, it's the only thing, I'm sorry, my
That's fine.
notifications are dinging. The only thing that I can say it was an instant knowing. It was an instant knowing that came from the feeling. So I stepped into her apartment because she did stuff in her apartment back then, right? And so I stepped into the apartment and it had this kind of long corridor leading to the kitchen. And even before I'd got to the kitchen and seen her, I could feel that this was it. I just feel it. And so as I walked, I felt really excited and I walked along and into the kitchen, and there she was sitting in a chair by the fridge, just kind of smiling away. And I saw her and I just felt this beautiful warmth and love and joy and just ordinariness, right? And it was that mixture of stuff. It was the beauty of humanity and the spirit that comes through humanity, alongside the humility that was just an ordinary person. And those two things, I think, together probably are what did it. But I just was like, this is it. This is it. This is what I was looking for. You know,
It's
all that.
incredible the way you light up speaking about her and that experience. Oh my gosh, you can see how it really, really touched you.
Yeah. I think because it was the culmination of so long of looking, you know, and then finding it was like better than I even thought, you know, that feeling, that sense. And I can still feel it now because every time I used to go to as many seminars as I could, you know, because she was only alive for another year after I met her, you know, and so, or just under a year even. And so, you know, I went to everything I could. And just that feeling is, it makes me smile so much. They were such beautiful times because the whole feeling of it all was just wonderful, you know.
It's all over your face. I mean, I think even for the people who are just listening to the podcast, they can hear it. I mean, it's like beaming from you, just even in your voice. And I have to say, it's hilarious that your friend was so protective. Now, that's a good friend, Amanda. Like someone like, listen, you can't even go until I know.
But
This
she
is
was
safe
ready
for
to go on
you.
her own, right? Yeah.
I'll go and I'll let you know if it's safe. Okay, so you meet Chiyoko Yamaguchi. I don't think we said her name yet, but you write about her even so beautifully in the book. And before we dive deeper and just into your experiences with her, I'm curious, was that relationship and that meeting of her, did that in part inspire you to do more research and write or, co-author Women in Reiki with Zilke?
Probably ultimately, I mean, it's a long time later, right? I think, you know, the beauty of my position there, the fortuitousness of my position, was that they were at a place where they were kind of looking for somebody who was a native English speaker that lived locally, who could help them kind of consolidate the English textbooks and things like this. So, and also Tadao Sensei at the time, her son Tadao Yamaguchi, he had written a book in Japanese, trying to help actually Japanese people understand this was normal and not weird and not ghost. It was actually, you know, families were using it. It was an everyday thing to use just to help people around you know. And so he'd written this book to kind of explain that. And then it was translated into English. And so I was able to be somebody who helped with all of that. So it was such good learning for me, right? All of that. It was a deep dive into everything, you know? So not only was I going to the seminars, but I was getting this wonderful experience that really helped me, you know, in my understanding and of everything. And as you say, you know, I think living in Japan really helped me as well. It really helped me to understand the nuances, right? And the whole, because we have such a different way of looking at life in the West, just from our history, than they do in the East. Even though we probably all started the same, I would imagine, many long time ago, we probably were in more of a similar place. But, you know, it's really, really changed. And so I think, you know, me just having a glimpse, right, from living there, of that difference. And I was just starting, I think, to get at that time more of an understanding of some of the Japanese cultural traditions and what the point was of, you know, sitting having tea for 5 hours, you know, when I was very kind of like to start with, but I was just starting to get it more. I was starting to allow myself to sink into experiences rather than think about them or try and make them better with my head and with creating things on. And that's what we do in the West all the time. We're obsessed with making things better by creating things with our head, more things to make it bigger and better and more magical. And we're so obsessed with that in all walks of life, I think, that we miss so much. And so I started, and I'm still, of course, on a journey of understanding fully, but I think I was so lucky in that place where I could begin to learn that and experience it in the home where everybody was of that kind of understanding, you know.
You know, Amanda, it's really interesting hearing you say this. It makes me think of a couple of things. One, hearing you say how, you had to really learn how to allow yourself to sink into experiences and not be so heady, which, the practices within the system of Reiki really point to and emphasize a lot as well. And I think part of what helped me with that in the beginning is because I signed up for a meditation class at the same time as I signed up for Reiki. But at the time, I was so stressed out because I had gotten laid off from one job, didn't want to go back to the same industry, all of that I didn't want to think. You know, and it was like I did not want to think. I did not want to do. I just wanted that. I just wanted to sink into something other.
Yeah,
And so
exactly.
that really, I think I never even realized that until just hearing you say that. That's what kind of like put me in the space of wanting to allow just anything but the chaos of mind. And it was
Right.
such a helpful point in working with energy, period. But I want to ask you about that too, because a lot of us, when we first do encounter Reiki, as we do with many things, we want to get it right. And
Yeah.
so, we will overthink and we want to try really hard. And I remember at one point, I was like, wait, is this coming out of my hand? Like, what's like almost trying to force it out, right? So I wanted to ask you about that. Once you actually received Reju and, you're already initiated into the system, did you go through a point of trying and did something help you realize? Just stop that.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I did. I went through it's so interesting to me because I was in an environment where, everybody around was extremely encouraging. Chiyoko Sensei constantly reminded people that everybody can do this. There's nobody who cannot do it. She constantly was calmly, beautifully, compassionately encouraging everybody, even those who, there's a lot of us at the beginning, I think, with Reiki and anything like this, who are like, oh, maybe other people can, I can't. We have our whatever our stuff is, it really comes out, doesn't it, when you do these kind of things. And so for me, what it was, I mean, I believed in it. I just couldn't feel the Byosen, right? So the Byosen, these different sensations that you get in your hands that are kind of telling you what's going on in the body. This was Chiyoko Sensei's main thing. This was very, very important to her. She was taught around like doing treatments and being able to do them most effectively by being able to feel, right, these different things. I couldn't feel a thing, like nothing. And I was like, I just assumed that I would, and I didn't, right? And so then I was like, oh my God. And I felt like I was letting her down if I said no, I couldn't feel it, and my hands were freezing cold. I was just like, oh my God. But she just continually encouraged me and encouraged me. She would just come around every time because I used to go and help sometimes with treatments, and she would say, just keep going, keep going. It's okay, it's okay. And was really trying to show me I had to be calm. I had to stop trying. And I didn't think I was trying until I stopped trying. And when I stopped trying, I realized how hard I'd been like trying to make this thing happen and so worried. I was so worried about getting it wrong or not being good enough, I think, is a very big thing many of us have,
It's fine. Again, just watching you light up, speaking about her, I've heard many stories about her because I studied with our Java sensei. So of course, yes, and I got to meet Tadao as well. And he has stories for days about her as well. So, and also has that just like radiance, speaking of her. But I wanted to ask you about this because I think my knowing of her and hearing of her was only because I studied with our Java sensei. And prior, for a lot of us, the only woman we hear about associated with Reiki is Mrs. Takata. And so even when I, first of all, could we talk about the thickness of this book? When I first saw your book, and I know I was going to interview you because I love to read the books first, right? I was like, how on earth am I going to get through this before? But I have to say, it is so beautifully done. Like, I enjoyed reading it. It was almost like I couldn't believe it was done by the time it was done. But one of the things that was so intriguing were that you included these stories of other women who were at the very beginning of Reiki, and that I was like, why didn't we hear about them in class? Right. So I just want to tell everyone, just as a side note, you have got to read this book, Women in Reiki, if you haven't already. I mean, your mind will be blown, and it's beautifully, beautifully written. But did you already know, especially with having the teacher that you had, did you know that there were already stories about these other women that were kind of pioneers within Reiki? Or did you learn this as you started doing research?
No, we knew little. We knew stuff about them, little bits about them, right? So the first lady in the book, Chie Hayashi,
Hayashi.
most people have heard of Hayashi, it's his wife, right? So she is mentioned when Chiyoko Sensei and Taro Sensei taught the history, they mention her. And then Chiyo Sugano was Chiyoko Sensei's aunt, right? Who happened to be good friends with Chie Hayashi, right? So she's also mentioned because it was her and her husband who first kind of introduced Chiyoko Sensei to it. So, you hear about them and little bits about them, but we, that's Zilke, who I co-wrote the book with, Zilke Clayman, and I wanted to know more, right? We want to know more about these women. Who are these women? And when we really looked at it, we were like, well, actually, without Chie Hayashi, I'd never thought anyway. I don't know if maybe Zilke had already, but without her, really, what would have happened? Because it wouldn't have gone through the war and out the other side in the way it did,
Wait, so
openly.
can we just talk about this for a second? Because again, this is something that a lot of practitioners don't know about, of like what was going on in Japan at the time, when Reiki was still very new. And so this war happens, and a lot of the men, of course, are sent off to war. And as we learned through your book, a lot of the practice continued on, and the supporting of the people that were even coming back from war, just all of this, a lot of space was being held by the women. So could you talk a little bit about what was going on at that time and the role that the women were playing? Can
So,
I'll ask you after.
no, go on.
I was just curious too, was it unusual at that time for women to, I want not just be in the role of, but I imagine, let's say if you had men almost in a society of sorts practicing this technique, were the women that were brought in, were they equal to them, or was it an odd thing? Could you tell us about that too?
Yeah, sure. So in Usui Sensei's time, many of the pictures you see are the men. But that's not that women weren't doing it. And there are pictures of women as well with him. But of course, at that point in time, in the 1920s, women did not take the higher roles in things, so they wouldn't have become teachers. So the pictures you see of him, with his teachers, of course there are no women because that's just not what happened in society at the time. But you do see a change, like as Hayashi Sensei, when you start to see him after Usui's death and you see more pictures of him, he had a lot more women students, and women began to become teachers in that time as well. And so it was still, however, I mean, it was fascinating researching about Japan for this. just to get more information about, you know, how women were in these times and what was expected and all that kind of thing. And you know, the women were introduced by their husbands. That's how it worked. The husbands, almost like Ikuko did with me, right? So the husbands would go and learn it first, and then they would invite the wives, and the wives would come and learn it as well. But you know, this really changed during the times that we've got these stories happening, you know.
Right.
Chujiro Hayashi's wife, you know, did a lot of Reiki. She helped him in the clinic, as far as we're aware. The fact, though, that she took over his institute is really huge and very, I would say, courageous as well, you know,
Right.
given what was going on. So for those who don't know, well, I'm sure everybody knows that Hayashi Sensei died in 1940. And there are different stories out there as to, you know, exactly why. He did end his own life.
Right.
Now, Tadao Sensei has information, my teacher now, Chiyoko Sensei's son, right? He has the information that Chiyoko Sensei's aunt gave them. Now, she was really good friends with Chie Hayashi. So we can really trust this information, you know. And
Yeah.
Chiyoko Sensei used to say, used to be funny, because when I was there and she was doing seminars and stuff, and sometimes, you know, Westerners would come to learn and ask questions. And she would say, I heard it with these own ears, you know. So her aunt kind of knew all of the inside info as to what was happening and or ha happened. And so when Hayashi Sensei ended his own life, it was because he knew things were going to get impossible for him. You know, for him, as somebody who now did Reiki full time, all these beautiful students, just been to Hawaii with Hawaii Otakata, taught all these students over there. Like, he couldn't take part in an invasion. It just was unthinkable to him. He
Right.
couldn't give any information or, you know, help the government, who were looking for that kind of thing now. So, you know, that's what he did. He ended his life. And his wife, now, normally with something like, so he had his Hayashi Reiki Kenkyukai, which means institute, right? So normally, of course, his son would have taken over. His son did Reiki, he would have taken over. Or one of his main male students would have taken over, as per Japanese society, traditional society, right?
Right.
For his wife to take over, it says a lot, but it's understandable, right? Given that, you know, this is a very suspicious thing to do right at this point in time for him to end his life. You know, he would have, his headquarters of his Reiki, you know, institute would have been being watched, probably. You know, the male students would have had to been very careful, very, very careful. So it couldn't work as normal. And so his wife took over because, you know, his son turned his back on Reiki after that, right? Understandably, he was upset by,
Yeah.
you know, his father had had to do. And so his wife was the one that needed to take over. And she ran it. I mean, now, of course, this is a horrible situation. You're being probably watched. Everybody's very careful. She has to pretend it's kind of all behind closed doors now, you know. But she kept doing it. And I think that was one of the things that inspired me so much and made me appreciate her courage and her commitment to what her husband had chosen, was
Right.
this, you know, that she did keep going to all of the branches of the institute, supporting people, teaching, carrying on as best she could, right through the war, when it was, you know, she had to stop for a little bit during the war. But she kept going, she kept on. And after the war, she kept teaching. And we found some more evidence, which is in the book, about, you know, the fact that she did carry on teaching,
Yeah.
really right up until she died.
I think that's one of the things that really struck me in reading the book was how you really do get a sense of one, how important the role was with women in Reiki in different phases, even, right? Even with Mrs. Yamaguchi and even with Takata, with it being present here for us today. And again, it's not something that you necessarily learn about commonly in all of the classes. So it was just incredible and very inspiring to read in your book. I wonder, though, too, going in, even though you had heard stories about them and, it piqued your curiosity, did it really exceed your expectation? I mean, like, were you wowed by what it was that you and Zilke were finding? Were the two of you just like up all night talking, like, can you believe?
Well, we live in different countries, so we weren't up all night. And we
Yeah.
were together, of course, many occasions, but we were on Zoom like this. And
Yeah.
but yeah, we would get excited about different things, that
Yeah.
happened, and different bits of information we found. We obviously went to Japan again, and spoke a lot with Tadao Yamaguchi, who was really good to us in terms of giving us more information than he
Yeah.
had before, and being willing to show us, new things. And then we found, I mean, we were helped a lot. Justin Stein helped us,
Yes.
and he found and introduced us to Bob Nagano. I forgot his name. Nagao. That's terrible. I forgot his name. Sorry. But anyway, the other guy who had the certificates that proved, that she was, and we were really excited about stuff like that.
Yeah.
We were very excited to get permission to use Kimiko Koyama's photograph. Now, she comes later in the story, of course,
Yes.
but she had her own beautiful story. She's the first and so far only female president of the Usui Reikidyo Hogakkai,
Right.
his society. And so, we were very excited to get permission for that, and so there were some really lovely things that happened that had us, kind of like very excited on our Zoom together,
I mean, because it's that way reading the book. I mean, really, truly, it's one of these books that, I mean, you're just excited and in awe of all the research you all did. So I have to say, first of all, thank you for the research and putting this book together. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, I've recommended it to everyone already anyway, but you really do learn so much. And I think it gives us a deeper appreciation for the system, the way it was sustained, and how it even came to be that we get to practice as we do today again. So I wanted to ask you a bit about Mrs. Takada, because I think she is more commonly the only woman in Reiki that most people hear about is Mrs. Takada, and understandably here in the West. Were there any things about her that was interesting or that you didn't know prior? Because generally we just hear, that she had her own illness going on and she is the reason that we now have it in the West, but there wasn't much depth to the history of her. Yeah. Were there any things about her story that really stood out to you?
Well, it's interesting because I didn't know a lot about her
Right.
before. I too, had only kind of heard a touch of it.
Right.
For me, I was fascinated by her achievements in terms of where she came from and what she did, So learning about her childhood in Hawaii, where she would have grown up, in a Japanese community in Hawaii, but of very low status as they were then, in Hawaii. And she really obviously worked really hard and was able not only to work her way up into kind of different levels of society, because it was very much, more levels then. She worked her way up. But she also was clearly extremely good at communication, right? And being able to communicate with people from all walks of life, which is what really, I think, saw her achieve what she did later in her life with Reiki, right? The fact that she had that gift. And also, just this appreciation of, for me anyway, of this, these two cultures. She was kind of between two cultures,
Right.
and that you can see that as a a huge challenge and difficulty, which it must be, but it also was a great advantage to her because she was literally able to bridge, this gap between Japan and America,
Right.
in a beautiful way. And I really appreciated, those things about her and what she did there. And really the fact that she just never gave up on it, because of course, after the war, everything was really going well for her, right? She had a branch of the Hayashi Reiki Institute there. She was the first woman to head a branch, as far as we're aware.
Yeah.
And, everything was going well. People were so excited about Reiki in Hawaii, right? In the early 1940s, it was a big thing. Sorry, just before that, 39, 40. And then, of course, after Pearl Harbor, that was it,
Right.
But the fact that she never gave up on it, right? And then she gradually it comes out again later and becomes more and more okay for her to be teaching it later. And yeah, and when I say okay, I'm talking about it just in terms of teaching something
Right,
Japanese,
right.
say.
Yeah, and there's a lot of course, conversation around that too, like where Reiki may have been westernized, but having consideration for where she may have had to make some adaptations or explain things in a way or present it in a way so that it could be presented at all. I mean, even that is quite amazing. And to think through thinking from like 1922 to now, until now, what was it, when they had the 100th anniversary of Reiki a couple of years ago, it was just like, wow. And it's still here. And not just that it's still here, but it's still spreading like wildfire. And, to think of now people are practicing in hospitals and trying to figure out how to get it on insurance and all of these things. But when you read something like your book and look at the history, it just makes it even more incredible. So this brings us back to you, beautiful love. So you get immersed in this and you had found your teacher and you're living in Japan and you're taking it all in. What was that like for you at first? I mean, were you, was it something that you felt like I'm going to teach this thing, or was it a path of self-discovery initially? What was going on for you in the beginning, or even now?
Good question. Do you know what? I didn't know at the time, because I was just living it. I didn't know at the time just how special it was and how grateful I was going to be in the future that I'd had that experience. So I was just living it and loving it, right? And doing everything I could. And learning it and just having a good time, to be honest. Like, we had a great time together. There was such a beautiful community feeling, and it just felt so wonderful. It felt like I was finally part of something that was really helping people, making a difference, which is what I wanted to do when I was in mental health, in the first all that time before. But felt like I wasn't getting anywhere. I felt like we were putting people in boxes, giving them pills, and that was it, and it didn't seem to make much difference from what I could see. So I was like, oh my God, like I can finally be part of something, that really does is bigger and than myself. And it really was, because we did these beautiful group treatments. I loved it. Like, when if someone was really ill, they would just invite everybody to come. And I particularly remember this woman who had cancer coming over from Germany. And we had like so many people treating her at the same time. We had like two layers of people treating her, and it was such a beautiful experience. And then we would all have fun together, So it's not this, it wasn't this very serious, like, I don't know, like droll, dry thing, which some people maybe think it is. I don't know. But it was this just a beautiful, fun, together, ordinary thing. It's that ordinary thing again that attracted me so much. It's part of life. And I think it's part of how we used to be together, right? Someone's ill, everybody gets together. It gives a bit of their time, their love, you know, to help people. And, you know, it's a beautiful way to live. And I loved it.
I love what you're saying because I think it points to that part of Reiki too that took me a while to figure out. And of course, still learning it, right? Was that like the beauty of how communal it is, just to be with each other, but to be with each other in a lighthearted space, in just a space of like love and respect and honoring of life, rather than again being afraid and worried and oh my God, am I doing this thing and trying to control the situation or thinking that there's something you have to figure out and do. You're making me think of just even witnessing our Java sensei. I mean, like when he lays hands, or he's, I mean, for lack of a better word, he's chilling. Like he just is like, he's just so happy and he's fine and he'll talk to you is no problem. But I wanted to say too, that experience of having multiple practitioners laying hands. So two things also in his class. One of the classes, there was a woman who was going through cancer treatment. And as a class, we all volunteered to go work on her, even when class was over, you know, and it was often, you know, at least two of us at a time. But in one of the classes, I had the experience of, it was at least three people, if not four, on me at one time. And when I tell you, that is an experience. Okay. Like, honestly, the first few minutes, I wanted to jump off the table. Like, everything in me was vibrating in such a way. I was like, what is happening? And I had to talk myself into not getting up. And plus, our Java was like near my head. So I felt like I really couldn't get up. Right. But it was wild, the sensation. But after a while, it subsided. And then when it was over, I felt like I could do cartwheels, backflips, like never felt so good in my life. So it was really an incredible experience to have that kind of communal, exactly what you're talking about. And if no one's had the experience, I recommend you get out there and try it. Yeah. Yeah. But what was in your experience with that? Do you teach in that way as well? Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the type of Reiki that I teach, the Jikidin Reiki that
yes.
Chiyoko Sensei did, group treatments were the way to treat somebody who has a serious condition.
Right.
That's what you did. I mean, it's fine to treat somebody on your own, of course. You don't need
yeah.
it all the time. But when somebody has a serious condition, that is how they did treatments.
Yes.
And so that's how I learned, and that's what we practice in the seminars, is that, you know, group treatment, because
yeah.
it is such a beautiful experience. It is a bringing together of everybody, you
yeah.
know, in love together.
Yes.
It's a wonderful thing. And, you know, this kind of touches, I think, on what we've talked about before in the last time we met about, you know, this is our way forward now, right?
Right.
I'm not saying, yeah, everybody has to give Reiki to everybody, but just this community, this being together, and being together in love and fun, you know, and laughter and community and compassion, and, you know, all these beautiful ways of being together. And they can happen in all types of ways, in all walks of life, but it's the only way that we get through these really challenging times now, I think.
Oh, 100%. And I think you bring up such a good point, because a lot of people, I've heard people say sometimes like they may be curious about Reiki or something, but they don't want to be a practitioner or they don't want to be a teacher. And it's so much bigger than that. And I think to your point, there are so many aspects to the system that really are just helping us as an individual just be a better human. You know, and let us like learn how to access that love within ourselves so that we can be more loving as a member of community and of society. So I wanted to ask you about that too, Amanda. After these years of practicing and just all of your experiences, how do you feel that it has changed you? And what, from your point of view, if people are like, well, what is this thing? What is Reiki? And what's the point? What is the point to you?
Let me feel into that a second. There's a lot to that answer, I think. So firstly, what I really want to stress is, you talked about, Reiki, people don't want to become a practitioner. Why do it? Oh my God, why do it? Because you can make such a difference to your own life and to your loved ones' lives. I teach a lot of people who don't want to become a practitioner. They just want to make life easier. And so they can help themselves with aches and pains and problems, and then more serious problems. They can help their loved ones at those times when you're like, I can't do anything to help this person, my loved one who's in pain. It's the most horrible situation to be in. You can help them, even a little, and it's just a beautiful, empowering thing. So there's that side of it, which is really what Chiyoko Sensei was teaching as well. Because in those days, when she was learning in the 30s, they did it to help family. That's why they did it. You didn't do it to go and earn a living. You did it to help family and friends. And then there's the side of the deepening into yourself, the inner learning, right? Now, the Gokai is just a small part of that. Well, actually, I don't want to say it's a small part because the Gokai is huge, but it is the reading of it is the beginning of it. The going inside it is the journey from it, right? And it's so simple. I've met so many people who dismiss it, think it's not much, just think it's a set of rules. It's none of it. It's so deep if you allow again yourself to sink in. I've had a lot of different learnings in a lot of different ways, and Reiki is a huge part of it. It's not all of it, but it's a huge part of it. And I think it's just this kind of, it's brought many things to me. The practicing of Reiki, each time I give a treatment, I feel myself come back to center. I feel myself come back to myself more and more and more. And it Arjava, actually, I was talking to him yesterday, and he was talking about it feeling as if it polishes your insides,
Yes.
That it's a so there's this, it's so beneficial to give a treatment. And sometimes people say to me, oh, if I'm not feeling well, I don't give a treatment. Oh my God, you should. Because you'll feel better. It's so good for you. So there's the physical part of giving Reiki to yourself and others that helps you physically with your physical body. But then as people know, there's an emotional side of it that Reiki is also working on, also helping you to become calmer, to have less anger, to worry less, to be more grateful, and to just do whatever is in front of you. To move forward in life with this gratitude in your heart, that then allows this kindness to come out because kindness is our natural way of being. It's who we are. It's our nature. And so, the doing of Reiki, just when you're doing it from a place of not trying, and when you're doing it from a place that allows you to sink deeper and deeper into the silence, into the moments, it can't help but enhance your understanding of, not understanding, it goes back to head, that's the wrong word, but it just enhance your way of being in life, right? And that brings you, I think, for me, that brought me into a greater place of trust in life. Much, much greater.
So beautifully said. And it's interesting. I mean, that's why I fell in love with the practice. I mean, just having such a deeper appreciation for the ways that I was changing. That was unexpected. I mean, Reiki was recommended to me by an astrologer. I had never heard of this. I was like, what is this?
I love it when stuff like that.
And I Googled it and I was like, this sounds weird. So I took a class instead of having a treatment first.
Hang on a
But
second. You thought this sounds weird, so you took a class?
yes, yeah. I was like, this is the weirdest thing. What is I'm gonna take the class. Yeah, like
Just
because
see. Yeah.
yeah, I wanted to have more understanding rather than someone just like doing something to me and I have no idea of what, right? So I had no expectation around it. I had no idea of what it was really going to, how it would impact my life. But I have to say, it's one of those beautiful things. Like I think of hindsight, how I thought like I'm a good person, like I have a good heart, I'm have good intentions, all of these things, but wasn't really noticing the contrast to my behavior into that knowing of myself. Do you know what I mean? And so through the being in relationship even to Reiki throughout the years and that interesting unlayering and that reflectiveness that happens and where you don't feel like you have to avoid recognizing different aspects of yourself and you truly do end up having this compassion for yourself and then it widens into having more compassion for other people. And I mean, I feel like explaining it just doesn't really fully express all that you will experience and encounter, but it's phenomenal. And I just want people to know too, in your book, you have a section about living the Gokai. And to your point, that's another thing I always tell people, like, it's not just words to be memorized. Like it really, oh man, if you come into relationship and let those words become a mirror for you, the healing that happens is just beyond. I can't
Absolutely.
tell you how much I enjoy conversing with you. I think this is the third time I've had the opportunity, and look at the time. It's already been an hour.
Oh
But I
no, this is
want, yeah, can you believe it? Yeah, it's been an hour. So I just want to ask you as we're wrapping up a couple of things. One, are you teaching so that people can, yes, and you still do sessions and these things? Can you please let everyone know how to connect with you, your website, and how to learn more about your work?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I do teach. Primarily, I teach in the UK, in Cornwall, where I'm living at the moment. I'm taking care of my mom at the moment, so I've moved back to my home area,
Yes.
which brings its own set of interesting stuff, right? That
Yep.
comes up when you move home, which is good for me again, like having to really sit deeper into the
I did
Gokai
it
and.
for 3 years in COVID and now I'm back in California. Yes, it is.
Yes, it
Yes.
reminds you that you've got further to go. It's
Right.
good. So anyway, so I'm teaching down here in Cornwall. I'm treating in Cornwall. I'm doing distant treatments, and I'm also teaching in Kent. I move between Cornwall and Kent to teach at the moment. I do teach occasionally in the USA, in Canada. I'll be in Portugal, not this year now. It has to be postponed to next year, but. You know, if you go to my website, you can kind of see what's coming up. I hope to put some more dates on there very soon. But there are always new dates coming up there. So it's worth subscribing actually to the website because
Yes.
then, you know, I can let you know when new dates are up. And also I put blogs on about different things, sometimes Japanese culture and Reiki stuff. And so if you're interested in that, if you join up, I don't inundate people. Once every 1 or 2 months, I'll send out a newsletter with a blog and stuff. So my website is learnjikidenreiki.com. Okay, so that's JIKIDEN Reiki, REIKI. So learnjikidenreiki.com. And from there, yeah, you can see. And there's some blogs on there to read if people are interested in that too.
Yeah, I mean, we all love the resources, Amanda. Are you kidding me? Yes, give us all the resources.
Well,
And
there's a woman in Reiki site as well, the book, if you want to just have a little bit look of, about the book, and that is just womeninreiki.com.
oh,
So that's,
perfect. Okay, so I'll make sure both of those links are down in the show description so everyone listening, it'll be much easier for them to just click on the links down in the show description. But Women in Reiki, it really is a very inspiring read. And you go from, talking about these women that were, what we say, more at the beginning of Reiki being here with us in Japan, and then you move on to other women that are in Reiki as well. I don't want to give it away. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal book. And I thank you and Silky so much. I can't even imagine the hours of research and then having to put it together in a
Yeah,
way that, yes.
there was a
Yeah.
lot. I think it was beautiful that we did it together because, we were coming from very different angles, and so it's created, I think, more than
Yes.
it would have if it had just been one of us writing it, and that's
Yeah.
another example of how lovely it is to work together with people, right?
Yes. And that's funny too. Like, I wouldn't have, I don't know. I don't even know, honestly, if I thought about it that much. But in this conversation with you, that really did highlight and emphasize the beauty of how communal this work really is. And you'll see that even in Reiki circles, Reiki groups, these things where people will send requests out with whatever it is they're going through, asking for Nkaku or, can you help me? Can you help someone? And everyone is quick to say, of course. It's like not even a thought. Of course. And yeah, there's just a lot of love expressed in
Yeah.
this community.
And yeah. And you can fit, it's quite lovely, isn't it? Because you can really
Yeah.
feel that support underneath. Like it does hold you up when you're going
Right.
through.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a thing. Yeah.
It really is. I feel like you should come back so we can talk about some more of the layers of this beautiful, beautiful practice, because I mean, I think we could talk about it for days. I also wanted to let people know as well, though, this is, I think it's interesting. You also authored a children's book, A Rainbow in Her Pocket. Is that still in publication?
It's not the moment. I'm looking to bring it out again. So I had a children's book which I will republish, and also a travel book, which is a it's a short kind of fun travel stories,
Oh
but they have
wait,
lessons I learned.
is that the book you told a story? Was it something about like you and a waterfall in Japan, or something happened to
That
you in
was the
Japan?
That book, it's a series of times I nearly died. It was called,
Yes.
yeah. And one of them was when I was whitewater rafting and fell into and got sucked by a whirlpool. But yeah, so they were all kind of instances where I really learned something, that was valuable and has been valuable to me since,
Wow. Look at
Yeah.
all the adventure, the near-death experiences, and the smile.
All right. I'm still here, thank God.
Thank God.
There's a pilgrimage as well book that I'm working on now because I did the Shikoku pilgrimage in Japan, the 88
Yeah.
temples. So
Wow.
I'm working as well. So.
Well, I just want to let everyone know again, all of these things, although we didn't get to go into depth about it, you can learn about all of Amanda's work on her website, learnjikinandreiki.com, and also be sure to go to womeninreiki.com. Thank you again for taking time to share with us today.
You're so welcome. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoy it. I could talk to you for hours too, and I'd love to know more about you. Maybe next time I can ask you some questions too.
Oh, of course. Yes. And we'll all see you very soon. Bye for now.
Yeah.
Okay, beautiful alchemist. I just want to thank Amanda Jane again for coming and having this conversation with us. Hopefully, it inspired you and your path in some ways. I personally want to thank Amanda Jane for being wild and being so adventurous and following the nudges of life that led her to Reiki and writing this book and sharing with all of us in the ways that she does. So the book again is called Women in Reiki. You can learn more about the book at womeninreiki.com. You can learn more about Amanda Jane and her work at learnjikinandreiki.com. I hope that you all are having a fantastic day. Don't forget that you can learn more about me and my work at theenergeticalchemist.com. And if you want to learn Reiki with me in San Diego, I will be having a Shodan and Okiden class in September. So that is all for now, my loves. I will see you all again very soon. Remember to always journey in love.